Welcome back to the Footy Fix Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Botello, and alongside me is co-host Adam Bazana.
What is going on, everybody?
We have just came off of a huge weekend in the domestic leagues, and now this upcoming week, we have the Champions League. So it's fair to say that this is a huge week in football. Before we get into that, Adam, I have a question for you, and we'll start off with this one. If Neymar never went to PSG, would Barcelona have won another UCL after 2015?
All right, so what I'm going to say is maybe, you know, I don't know really where to take this because, you know, those 2 years that they had the absolute massive collapses, he may have been able to help, but the year that they were dominated by Bayern, I don't see him being a big effect in that game. So it would just really either be the Roma game or that the Liverpool comeback. Maybe he's able to help. And like the one thing I'll say to this is the last time they had a big comeback like that was against PSG, the remontada, and he was on the team for that. So maybe he helps inspire it. You know, maybe he gets another gross free kick goal and that is the difference for them. So, you know what? I'll say yes. And the year that they blew it to Roma that year, like the year right after he left.
Well, that's pretty bold to say because that was 2017, I believe. Mm-hmm. And that was the year that Real Madrid won it against... Oh, no, sorry. That was actually the year after where Real Madrid won against Liverpool. So I guess they would have been what? Do you think they would have faced Liverpool or Real Madrid in the final? Because that was a quarter match, but like, given the implications of them winning, who do you think they would have faced in the final? Would have been El Clasico or just Liverpool?
I think it would have been poetic and it would have been a nice El Clasico matchup. And that would have been amazing to see. Just another El Clasico to add to the long list of ones that have come before that have been absolutely just treats for fans to watch. But I'm going to throw a question back at you now. And my question for you is, what would Lionel Messi have to do to surpass Ronaldo as your GOAT? Because I know that for both of us, we say that Ronaldo's our GOAT. So what would Messi have to do to pass up Ronnie?
I think that this is difficult because now I have to argue against what I've been believing my entire life. A lot of people think that just because he won the Copa America means that he passed Ronaldo. And if that were true, then Ronaldo would have passed him in 2016 by winning the Euro. But the Copa America, in my opinion, doesn't hold as much weight as a European championship does. For sure doesn't hold enough as much weight as a World Cup does. So I think to pass him right now, Argentina would have to win the World Cup. There's your viable argument. But then again, still, what has Messi done that Ronaldo hasn't? Not much. But what has Ronaldo done that Messi hasn't? And that's a lot. Messi may have gone to PSG, but he's played very poorly. I mean, the slow start, he's racking up the assists. And that's because Kylian Mbappe is absolutely carrying PSG right now. But when Ronaldo started off at United, he was the best player in the world at United. He went to Madrid. He was the best player in the world at Madrid. He went to Juve, and he put up some numbers. And he had two seasons there where, yeah, he was a top three player in the world. So right now, is Messi a top three player in the world? Absolutely not. So I think the only thing that could put him ahead of Ronaldo, in my opinion, would be winning that coveted World Cup. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's very fair to say. And I agree that it is all about dominance everywhere. It's not about dominance in one league or in one place. It's dominance everywhere, dominance every league you go to, every team you go to. The culture has changed, the team has changed, and Ronaldo does display that 100%.
Exactly. All right. Exactly. And our opinions are the right ones. Okay. No, don't listen to anybody else. Anybody who says Messi's the GOAT is just wrong. Wrong.
Let me throw in a quick disclaimer there. Nah, everybody, you can have your own opinions. Don't worry about it.
Anyways, let's get to the matches. We're only going to go over four, but we're going to pick one from each of the top five leagues, even though there's nothing really from Germany to talk about. And Nice and PSG just barely made it in there, right?
Well, they're also not a top five league anymore because France is now sixth. Portugal passed them.
Very true. So I guess we're just talking about three of the top five leagues and one other league. Anyways, so Milan won against Napoli in a crucial game in the Scudetto race. 1-0. I watched the match. Wasn't that exciting. But Milan, again, proving, I don't know where. I mean, I don't see a lot of quality on this team. I see a lot of emerging talent, but I don't see a lot of quality on the team. But then again, we had a really solid performance from Mike Maignan. We had a really solid performance from Kalulu, the new center back who came in for Romagnoli in the Coppa Italia. And then now he's emerging as probably their starter. And then we saw a Giroud goal putting Milan ahead in the second half. So what are your thoughts? Like, Milan is top of the table right now, but it's such a close title race between them, Inter, and Napoli. that really anything could happen. Can they? Do they have enough to take it all the way compared to the other two teams?
I think what it's going to come down to is the two players that I thought played very well as well. And one guy you didn't mention was Tomori and Kalou. I think it's going to come down to them. And obviously when Romagnoli comes back. But it really, for them, I think it comes down to their defense. Because they've shown that Giroud, as you know, as old as he is and as much as people want to write him off, I still think he's a great poacher. I think he is, like he showed in this goal, he just always seems to be in the right place at the right time. And throughout his career for France and for Arsenal, he was always very good. Even his later years in Chelsea, he's always great at being in the right position. And that's exactly what led to this goal. And so I think when you have guys like that, that are like veteran leaders like him, and then you also have Ibrahimovic, who's obviously one of the probably greatest veteran leader you could have on a team in terms of making sure you have a hardworking culture and everything like that. And you pair them with the young guys like Rafael Leao. As long as you have that solidity at the back with Maignan and Tomori and Kalou, as long as they play well, then I think that you'll see a lot of games like this where they can get away with a 1-0. Right, and that's all they need because they're so solid at the back that they're not letting anybody through. So all they need is just that one chance, that one little thing. And I think they're going to be able to do it in terms of winning. But I don't know if they're going to be able to do it in terms of winning the league. You know what I mean? Like, I think they're going to be able to win some games, but I still think that they won't be able to win the league this year.
I think that's fair to say. And like you said, they do have a good defense, but the problem that I have with it is just, like, I look at this team compared to Milan teams of old, right? Even those ones in 2011 and 12 when they were about to fall off. And I don't see anybody on that team that really scares me in any sort of way, like, or anybody who I would take on Juve other than Sandro Tonali and Mike Maignan. And that's two out of 11, let alone the subs included. So, and then when I put them up against teams like Inter, they're no match on paper, but somehow they keep on getting the results. Like, I do not understand. Even last year, Juve won one of the games they had against Milan. I think it was in the San Siro. And then we lost at home 4-1 or some odd, like something like that. It's just how I don't understand with the quality that Juve has, even last season and even this season as well, with the quality Inter, with the quality that Napoli have. Maybe they're a little more even, them and Milan and Napoli. But I just, how do teams not break down Milan? Like, is it well coaching? Is it good coaching by Pioli? Or is it the fact that, like you said, is it Tomori and Kalulu? Just playing, they're actually good defenders. Is that what this is?
You know, I'm going to say it's a mixture of both. I think Pioli has done a great job of coming in here and, you know, taking a team that, like you said, maybe don't have that many superstars, but he's definitely done something with them. But again, it comes down to whether or not Tomori and Kalou are going to be able to continually recreate this, because this is, you know, it hasn't been that long. Like you said, Kalou's a new transfer. And they're, you know, they're really pushing now Milan for that top spot. But yeah, for me, I won't be able to tell you until I see a few more games, and then it'll be clear whether or not they're going to be able to keep this up for a long time, because it's just inconsistency. I think that's their biggest issue or their biggest enemy for their title shot.
All right, let's move on to La Liga, where Atletico Madrid beat Real Betis 3-1 in a crucial match in the top four race. Atletico didn't really bring much this game, I thought. Again, another flat performance. It's almost as if they're the Manchester United of Spain. Not as bad, of course. But somehow they still squeak out the result. So this is, you know, this has major implications on the top four race and really even the Europa League. Because for some reason, it seems to be that only Real Madrid are in La Liga and everybody else is somewhere else. And we look at Barcelona, who are on an incredible run of form. I'm fairly certain that it's 11 or 12 games unbeaten under Xavi. Xavi's pulled that team back into the top four. But even with that being said, again, it's another case of just me looking at the teams around and saying, like, this is Real's title to lose at this point. They're 8 points up on second. And really, like, all the other spots are up for grabs. And I thought that Real Betis, given their form, would have taken this one. But Atletico just did what Atletico does sometimes, and they just pulled out a win. If you want to dive into some of the specifics of the game, go right ahead.
Well, I didn't actually get a chance to fully watch it. I just had to go over it a little bit, so I don't have full specifics. But that being said, what I think you see is that Atletico, it's just the way that Simeone plays in terms of the counterattack and not having possession at all. Like, Betis had 66% possession in the game, and they had 18 shots, only 6 on target. But still, like, they were the offensive push in the game. And it's just classic Atletico that they sit back and they wait for their chance and they take their chances. And, you know, they were clinical in their chances in this game. And actually, they scored a very early goal. It was there was a third-minute goal from Yao Felix, and he scored one in the 81st as well. I love to see that from him as well. Just quick shout-out, Yao Felix, great youngster. Or we still call him a youngster at this point. He's 22, yeah. And I really like him. I'm interested to see what he does in the future in Portugal, because they're going to have all the young guys they have coming up. It's going to be a team to watch out for in the future as well. But yeah, I think that it was very important for Atletico to win this game, though, because now they are 2 points up on Betis with the same amount of games in fourth. And now they're tied with Barca on points as well. Barca does have a game in hand on them, but this puts a little bit more pressure on Barca for their next game, that they need to either get a draw or a win out of it. They need to get a point so that they're ahead of Atletico when they have the same amount of games. And it's just Atletico, you don't want to be dropping out in the fifth spot, right? You let Betis win that. Betis can increase the gap between them. Then it would be a four-point gap between them. But now it's a two-point gap with Atletico on top. So very important game, and they were able to get the result.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. But I want to touch upon João Felix. I don't think we've talked about him enough, quite frankly. And that's because I think Atletico was the wrong team for him, to be honest with you. He's such an offensive player going into such a defensive team or defensive style. But two goals in this one. He obviously had that wonderful header against Manchester United. He's kind of picking up form, and he's looking very, very good. And he's one of those guys, like, he's another Portuguese youngster. That's one thing. But he's another guy that came from the Portuguese league and is completely showing up and showing out all over Europe, domestically, in the European competitions. And he's a really good player. Like, we don't talk about him because he doesn't boast the stats that these other youngsters do, but he is really talented. He's a fantastic dribbler. He's a really good trickster. He can score goals. He can provide assists. Like, he has got it all. And I think if he was playing for, I don't know, somebody like Manchester City or somebody like even Barcelona with a more offensive approach, we would be talking about João Felix like every single week, like we do to Kylian Mbappe.
Yeah, that was actually, I was going to be my next question to you. Was, you said you didn't like where he went to Atletico. I was going to say, where would you have wanted him to go? I agree with that too. I think that him at Man City would have been awesome as like a little number nine to run in there. Basically, yeah. Could be doing what Sterling's doing at this point now.
Better.
Or yeah, he would be doing it. But yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think that hopefully, maybe this will be a turning point for him in terms of like now he'll, they've got the game coming up next week against Man U. Maybe quick jump ahead to the later parts of the episode in the preview, but maybe this will spur a nice good run of form for him, and we'll be able to see that against Man U.
Agreed, and he does pose a huge threat for Manchester United, especially given how just terrible their back line is, with or without Varane. I mean, I love Varane, I really do, but it's like he is carrying three other players. He's only one guy, and when you're playing next to a pylon like Maguire, it's just, it can never go away. Anyways, let's move on to the United City game. Definitely the marquee match of this weekend. Another embarrassing watch. 4-1, De Bruyne scoring a brace, Mahrez scoring a brace, Jadon Sancho scoring one goal. And then it was just a very lackluster performance from United. I found that they came out at the first half, that they had 30 good minutes where Ragnick had some sort of weird, it wasn't quite gegenpressing, but it was like a weird counterattacking, pressing kind of style. It was confusing the players. It was confusing Pep. And I thought for like a second there that we were going to see one of those historic Etihad performances from Man U like we've seen in recent years, or Martial scoring or Pogba scoring, and they somehow squeak out a draw or a win against a far superior team. But that did not happen, because in the second half they came out and they did nothing. Like, and I cannot stress that enough. They did absolutely nothing. They gave City the ball. They gave City time. And when you give City a team with so much, like 11 players on City, and every single one of them is like a top five player in their position, when you give them that much of time and that much of the ball, they're going to pick you apart like nobody's business. So the problem here, there's a lot of problems. Obviously, Ronaldo was out of the lineup for Manchester United. We'll get into that in a minute or two. But what do you, like, I don't even know what to say about this match, to be honest, because it's just like United, what we've always seen, we've already talked about all season. But what do you think, what happened there for Man United? Like, why can't they just, Maybe they'll still lose 2-1, but why are they losing 4-1? What is wrong with this team?
I don't know if this speaks as much to Man United's failures as a team as much as it does to me. It speaks to the dominance that Man City have shown throughout this year. And I mean, they're still super clear on top of the league. They're 6 points ahead of Liverpool right now. Liverpool do have a game in hand. But like those two teams, you look at fourth place, the gap between first and fourth is 69 points to 48 points. That is a sizable, sizable gap. So I think it just speaks volumes to the Man City formula, really, that Pep has created. And you see it year in, year out, basically, at this point. Like, it's almost becoming normal now, like the dominance that we see from Man City. And so I don't think that the 4-1 necessarily is as much of a poor reflection on Man U as it is just a reflection of Man City's current, you know, it's their time right now, per se. Like, they're just, it's so dominant. It seems so effortless. The Mahrez goal, like the volley that he gets, no one's covering him up there. He's standing up there and there's no one seen around him. A perfect corner right to his foot and a beautifully hit volley. It did take a slight deflection, but still, like, they're just, there's no answer for them. It seems like there's no answer. And they're scoring buckets of goals against every team. It's not like it's just Man U that's letting in four. They will go to any team and put as many balls in the net as they can. And so I think, yeah, just it speaks more to just how good Man City have been this year.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, like Man City are, I think they're the best team in the Premier League. I think overall on paper and when they're playing, they're the best team. It's obviously close with Liverpool. But I mean, you know, they do have that 6-point lead, which is really a 3-point lead, and it'll be all settled in May when these two teams play each other. However, I think if you look at how Man City's done under Guardiola, and if they win the title this year, that'll be 4 titles in 5 years, and essentially they will become the new Manchester United. He'll become the new Alex Ferguson, and I think that there, you know, there grows the incentive for Pep to stay. There have been rumors that he wanted to go next year, but at this point, where are you going to go other than the Spanish national team? I think that that is where you want to end your career, but he's still a young guy. He still has everything going for him, and obviously, he's got an unlimited budget at Man City. He can do literally whatever he wants with that budget. He's got an excellent team. They all love him as a manager. I mean, I would love to play under Pep, personally, so there's no reason to go, and this is if they remain this good, we're going to see teams like Man U and Arsenal and other teams that are, and Chelsea, other teams that are just almost there, but really not win anything because Man City is just going to be dominating every single competition, every single game. And that is all domestically because, of course, we know they do have a few Champions League struggles here and there. But I think I really want to stress the point on how bad Man U is. And I really want to talk about, like, the leaks that come out are just it's just infuriating with this team. There's been leaks all season coming from guys like Maguire, Dean Henderson. There's been leaks from Fred. There's been leaks from Rashford. There's been leaks from obviously Mason Greenwood before he got removed from the team for what happened there. But the moral of the story is that this team is just they're such a toxic group of players. That dressing room is such a toxic environment. And it's so petty. It's so high school. It's just, it's drama, drama, drama all the time. And speaking of drama, so Ronaldo wasn't there for the game yesterday. It was rumored that it was because of a hip flexor issue. And what happened was he didn't show up with the team, was in the lineup, obviously. And he didn't even show up for the game. He went back to Portugal. And I'm assuming he watched it from home, which would have been a waste of his time. But he was back there, and I'm assuming he's rehabbing. So, again, the rumor is he was injured. However, an Instagram profile of Ronaldo fan account with over 550,000 followers posted a picture. And in the caption of that picture, they talked about how he wasn't really injured, Ragnick dropped him, and how this is a toxic environment at Man U, and how it's not his fault, and he is constantly the scapegoat of the team's failures. So, Baz, what do you think about that?
I think it's a little conspiracy theory type thing. I think that people go back, you know, or especially football players, professional football players, will go back to their homes two rehab injuries all the time just to see family, right? You got a super busy schedule between training for your team. In the off season, you're also doing training to keep your body in shape, and there's probably not a lot of time. So any time that they can get back to see, you know, their mom, their dad, their family, their cousins, they'll take it. And so for Ronaldo, you know, he's got a hip flexor issue. He's getting older. It's not like he's getting any younger. And as much as the man is a literal machine, you know, he's a human too. And so I think it's just something that's being blown out of proportion. You know, maybe his sister's thumb slipped. She liked it. I don't know. But I think it's being made out to be bigger than it is. They're trying to make a mountain out of this molehill. And yeah, I don't think there's a lot of any legs to the story yet.
So I guess no tin hat for you then.
No.
All right. Well, again, I'm going to agree with you there because then Roy Keane brought up an interesting point. I think he has his tin hat on for this one, and he really wants to believe in the theory. Because he was saying, like, oh, we talk about Ronaldo's such a machine, but, you know, a little torn hip flexor thing, and he's out of the Manchester Derby. But yeah. Yes, Roy Keane. I'm not going to say it to his face because I'm just terrified of him. But I've watched this guy all my life, and about when he was, like, 32, he's always had either it's a hip flexor or it's a slight knee tweak that takes him out of 1 to 2 games maximum. And this happens once a season. We saw it at Real Madrid in his last few years. We saw it at all of his Juventus. There'd always be like around this time as well. It'd be around March, around April, where he would just be out of the lineup because he has a hip flexor problem. He's 37. It is completely viable. There's no reason to be making these conspiracy theories up and to be accelerating the drama within the team. Now, again, we're not doing this. The fans aren't doing this. Everybody else in their right mind isn't doing this. The Man U players are doing this to themselves because there was yet another leak, actually leaks that came out of yesterday's game. One of them was Fabrizio Romano actually posted on Instagram, which means you know it's credible. Like it's a proper rumor that Rashford wants to leave because of lack of game time. I'm just going to say quickly, I like Rashford. He's got a lot of skills. He's just been stagnating for the last 3 years. So at this point, you know, leave. At this point, leave. Because if you go somewhere else in Spain and you just play the same, there's no English media to hype the hell out of you. And there's no English media to say that you're a world-class talent. And then we'll see that. Remember we talked about his FIFA rating being 85? How I said it should be lower? It'll be lower if he leaves. You watch. But the main leak that came out was that the players, Harry Maguire and other leaders or the leakers of the team, were angry that Ronaldo wasn't there with them today. Now, this completely contradicts the leak that they leaked earlier in the year that said there's a power struggle between Maguire and Ronaldo for the captaincy. So what is it you want? Do you want him there? Do you not want him there? What does it matter? Why are we trying to pin Man U's failures on Ronaldo? Without him in their squad, they have a 20% win percentage. So they're clearly not better without him, and that argument is down the drain. So is there anything else you want to say on this issue, or are you done with it? I've gone a bit of a rant. It's personal for me, all right? But anyways, let's get on to the Champions League games for next week. We have Man U, Atletico. That game is 1-1, headed into Old Trafford. Who's going to win this game, and tell me why, and don't use leaks as one of your reasons, please.
I will not use leaks, don't worry. No, I think, honestly, last game was exactly like we said it was going to be. It was two struggling teams coming in and, you know, not a great game. 1-1 draw. I think it's going to be a different story this time because it seems like Atletico have gone home and done a little bit better in the Spanish league, whereas Man U have gone home and kind of crapped the bed in the English league. So I am more inclined to take Atletico in this game, and I'm going to, because you know what? I want to. I'd love to see, like we were talking about Yao Felix earlier, and you know what? Now I'm hyped up for the kid. Want to see him do good. No, but yeah, I would take Atletico here, and I'm going to say 2-0.
Okay. I like it. That's a really good point you bring up on how Atletico have been doing fairly well recently, and again, they just won that huge game. So maybe that could carry into the week for them, and maybe put them ahead of Man U. I don't know. But like you said, how we saw a very boring game the first time around where the teams weren't at their best. I think we're going to see at Old Trafford the two of the teams at their very best. I think it's going to be the complete opposite of what we saw in Madrid. And I do see Man United coming out of this one for the sole reason, like I said in the previous episode, of Ronaldo against Atletico. He has never scored at the Wander Metropolitano, which is in Madrid, their home stadium, but he always scores on the return leg at home. This game, return leg, 1-1, no away goals, by the way, in Old Trafford. I think this is going to be like a 4-2 or a 3-1 Man U victory. I see Ronaldo scoring at least twice in this one, and then they're on to the quarters. And whatever happens there, whoever they draw, they're losing. But let's just focus on this because, I mean, there's already a lot of failures that they have on their plate. The next one up, Ajax-Benfica, that ended 2-2 in Portugal. They're heading back for the return leg at the at Johan Cruyff Arena in Amsterdam. Baz, who you got?
This is the game I am most hyped up for, to be honest with you. I loved the draw, like I said last episode, and it was a great game, you know, 2-2 on aggregate. Love to see my boy Darwin Nunez score as well on Benfica. Shout out him. But yeah, no, honestly, I think that Benfica is going to take this one. I think that they've been really, really good this whole year. And the whole, throughout the Champions League, even in the group stages, they were great against Barcelona. And they're going into this tied 2-2. I know they're going to Johan Cruyff, but I feel an upset coming. Because Ajax, they've played great. And to their credit, they had to have played great. And they've coming in here and they won all their games. They've won every game they've played in the Champions League this year, except for obviously the last one, the draw 2-2. But every game that means at home they've played this year, they've also won. So I'm thinking maybe they come in a little bit too cocky, thinking, oh, you know what? We went 6-0 in the group stages. This is just a little, this is going to be a little road bump, and then we're past Benfica. And I think Darwin Nunez is going to come out of the ground and stun them. I'm saying 2-1 or 3-2 Benfica.
I like it. I like it a lot. Unfortunately, I'm not going to go with my Portuguese team. I'm going to say Ajax. And the Johan Cruyff Arena plays a huge part in this. Not only do they have a really good home advantage, as you've been saying, but that arena is honestly, like, if you ever have the chance to go there, it is electric. It's on my destinations. I've never personally been there, but I've watched a lot of games, especially in the Champions League. The crowd shows up. It is loud. And arena aside, fans aside, Haller is on fire. I don't see him not scoring in this game. I think Erik ten Hag is going to bring out a team that can tactically break down Benfica without conceding too many goals, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. And I think that Ajax this year are poised to do something similar to what they did back in 18-19. I think it's going to be one of those years, and I think that this is the first game. I'm putting my tin hat on. This is the first game. And then they'll play Manchester United in the quarterfinals, and they'll win there too. That is my theory going in to this round of 16 games. So I see this game going, because of Haller, because of Antony, I see this game going, 2-0 for Ajax. I think 2-0. Let's go on to the third matchup of the week. You ready? Yep. Juventus-Villarreal, that ended 1-1. In Villarreal, they're coming back to Torino in Italy, to Allianz Stadium, and Juve have a shot, whether it be small or a big shot, to get out of the round of 16 for the first time in three seasons since 18-19. What do you see happening here, Baz?
I am putting both my hands together. I'm grabbing my rosary and I am praying. No, I think, honestly, Juve, if there is a time, it would be now. I think we're kind of, in terms of the league, we played well. The last game we had against Spezia wasn't the greatest, but it was a sound defensive game, which is what you love to see. And Vlahovic, you know, he has been scoring for us consistently. Morata scored again the other day, so maybe we'll finally see him, you know, come back to doing his mediocre scoring, because I'm not going to call him a good scorer. He was never a good scorer. I'm sorry. I can't stand the guy. But yeah, I think that this is going to be either a 1-0 or a 2-1 Juve win, and I think it's going to come down to Vlahovic scoring a goal. And my other person I really want to see do well is Artur. I'd love to see him get out there and just absolutely rip it up in the midfield. He played well against Spezia, and he had a shot that Locatelli ended up blocking, which it's unfortunate, but I thought I had a chance to go in. I wanted to see the guy do well. Because, you know, he hasn't played the greatest for us, but I still liked him. I always liked him. He's a little Brazilian guy. He's agile. He's great at passing. So I'd like to see the guy do well. I'd love to see an Artur goal. But overall prediction, Juve winning the game. Praying, more of a prediction, more of a prayer, but
that's like a weird Why Artur? I mean, I get it, you like him, but that's just such a... I thought you were going to say Locatelli, in all honesty, I did. But I love what you said about Morata, man. I do. I hate him. I hate him. I hate him. He's always offside. He actually sucks. He's just not a good striker. But he did score against Spezia. And I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to go Juve 1-0. I think they finally break the curse. And then we're going to get a whole section of fans saying, we never needed Ronaldo. We never needed... Shut up. Shut up, blood. You don't need that, right? These are deluded fans, and this is just the right time and the right place. Like, I think if he starts, Zakaria's out with injury, unfortunately, which could be our downfall. But I think if he starts Artur, Locatelli, and who else would you say in the midfield? McKennie or Rabiot? I would say that they're winning the game. If it is anyone else other than those three, you know what? Scratch that. If Artur and Locatelli aren't together in that midfield, we will lose that game. And I do see the goal coming from Dusan Vlahovic. That's the story. That's the script. It's going that way. He's scored in almost every game since he's arrived at Juventus. And I think that the curse ends. And then from there, we'll see. We'll hope for an easy draw in the quarterfinal. We'll hope for Ajax or Man U. But I do see them winning this game. I don't think Villarreal will have enough to get them to the quarterfinals.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And quickly there, about Artur, the reason I want to see him do well too is because so many people hated on him when he came in, and like, he didn't play the greatest for us, obviously, after he came in, but the guy got injured, and you know, we're hoping to see more from him now. But I'm actually going to take over on the last one here and say the last matchup that we have coming in is Chelsea against LOSC. Shout out to our Canadian boy, Jonathan David on Lille. What are your thoughts on this?
This is going to be the most boring game of all of the 8 games. Like, it is going to be just another... boring watch. The only reason you buy tickets to the Lille game is to watch, you know, Havertz and Conte, and that's it. You're buying the tickets to just see these players on Chelsea play, and that's it, because they have absolutely no chance of winning this game. Chelsea are too good defensively to give up 2 goals or to give up 3 goals or even to lose this draw. So I think that Lille, just they're sending their hopes, they're praying right to God. They have a direct line with the Ark of the Covenant, a direct wire to God, and they're asking, and who knows what they're going to get, but I for sure know it's not going to be a win. Even if David shows up and plays the best game of his life, he's not getting a touch or a shot inside the box. Like, it's not happening. Chelsea are winning this game. That's all said and done. What about you?
I'm actually going to go rogue here. I'm going to say that Jonathan David does score a goal, but no, Chelsea's going to win this 100%. Again, even if Lille managed to score a goal, if David does get on the score sheet, that's assuming that they're able to keep Chelsea off the score sheet, which is not going to happen. I think what Havertz took 6 minutes to score last time. Like, I don't see it happening at all. And like you said, you got N'Golo Kante absolutely shutting down the midfield. And there's just going to be nowhere for Lille's players to go. That being said, I'm going to take a nice 3-1, you know, a nice casual 3-1, maybe even a 2-1 game. I think that does it for time for us tonight. Yeah. So, for the Footy Fix podcast, I am Adam Bazana. And
I'm Ben Patello.
Thank you very, very much for tuning in with us. We hope to see you again next week. Have a lovely night.